Oh, yeah. Beautiful day here in New York City. Balmy 30 degrees. Rain blowing sideways. You know, one of those days that just makes you proud to be a New Yorker because you realize how tough you are, right? It's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Thanks for joining me, wherever you are in the world. Maybe you're in Holland today. Do me a favor. Shoot me an email. I want to find out where you're listening live right now. Mark@MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Mark@MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Also, 888-874-4888. Also, a big hello to Dave. Dave is one of the nutballs I teach at 6 o'clock in the morning on a spin bike. And he's a devout listener to PRN. So this is really a test for Dave. Or Joe, I should say. Joe. Jeez, I can't even get my names right. Speaking of names, Mike Ladone, world-renowned jazz pianist, is going to be here in just a few minutes. He is the founder and CEO of Disability Pride New York City, an incredible organization. And their biggest event is Disability Pride Parade, which is happening in 2017, which is kind of an eerie thought already, 2017 happening, even though we can't get this year behind us fast enough. But, of course, there's a lot of things that have to come together to put a parade on, especially in New York City. You need lots of money, right? So there's a big jazz festival concert happening a week from today. That's incredible. And Wynton Marsalis, a jazz icon, has written one of these quotes I'd like to read to you about. It's a privilege to play with my colleagues on behalf of this worthy cause. I have a little brother that suffers from severe autism. I thank all the musicians on behalf of families who have members who are disabled in some way. My hat goes off to Mike. It's a great pride and honor to be part of this initiative. And again, that's Wynton Marsalis. I mean, and he's obviously huge in the world of jazz, a great philanthropist as well. And I'm sure somebody who's just really, really happy to be part of Mike Ladone's effort. That's for sure. So, yeah, Times Square is getting to be a buzz, man. Even in this conditions of today, the rain and sleeting snow and all that jazz. So, you know, it made me realize about how old this tradition's been. 1907 was the first year the ball dropped, or somewhat some semblance of a ball, from 1907 into 1908. Was Dick, oh, I forgot, what's Dick's last name? Not Dick Cavett. Dick Clark. I don't think Dick Clark was there. But seems like he could have been, all right. Seems like he was, you know, ubiquitous, Dick Clark. So this year it's 12,000 pounds coming in, weight-wise, and 3,000 Waterford crystals. That and $3 will give you a subway ride, right? Big deal. But it's kind of neat. You know, I always wanted to be part of Times Square, but after 9/11, I'm like, that's it. Never going to happen, because you have to get in there hours and hours and hours in advance. And once you leave, I don't think you can get back in. You have to wait in line again through security. So I guess that long-time dream was basically put to bed. It's not in the bucket list. But, you know, one thing I did years ago, actually a few years, which is a really cool way to ring in a new year, was the Central Park Midnight Run. And I'm not sure if our guest, Mike Ladone, is an athlete that we'll meet in a few minutes. I'm not sure if he's ever put his sneakers on and ran around Central Park. But as a jazz musician in New York City, I'm sure he's at a gig. But I did it. It was very, very cool. You get, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 people at around 11:30 at night in Central Park. So, of course, it's dark. And Central Park obviously has that mystery and mystique. And all of a sudden, about 5 minutes of, 2 minutes of, fireworks starts going off, the race goes off, and then you actually don't go through the whole 5 miles of the Central Park loop. It's cut down, it's curtailed, I think, to maybe 2 or 3 miles, because the point of it is just to have fun, do something different. You can actually run from 1 year into the next and say you ran for 2 years straight. And there's no water stops. There's champagne stops. Yes. So that's my draw, my initial draw. But it was really cool, something to be really, really involved in a different way. And people dress up in all kinds of crazy costumes. And it's just kind of a different way to celebrate New Year's. So if you're in the sound of my voice in the tri-state area, maybe it's something you want to do. Give that a shot. New York Roadrunners Club, NYRRC.com or .org, I believe. Check that out. But it's always a fun thing. And also, you can go into a bar with your runner's bib on, and people will be like, what? It's a great conversational piece. So I'll tell you, man, good riddance to 2016. My God, as I speak, I just learned, my producer handed me a name of someone else who just kicked last night. And we'll get to that name in just a minute. But It's just a scary year. We lost so many incredible, incredible icons. Besides, you know, Carrie Fisher, who we lost 2 days ago at the young age of 60, you know, her mother. If you haven't heard this and you're just waking up, Debbie Reynolds, only 84, died yesterday, a day after her daughter died. I mean, that's no coincidence. I mean, she was rushed to the hospital. She suffered a massive stroke. I mean, says something about, you know, the natural order being disturbed. A mother losing her child or a father losing her child. I mean, it's just heavy-duty stuff. But, I mean, just incredible year. I mean, Princess Leia. I mean, I thought about actually the dynasty behind Debbie Reynolds and obviously the first movie she was in. With Singing in the Rain. I mean, that really catapulted her to fame and fortune for many, many, many years, and was working up till a couple years ago. Really, really incredible stuff. I mean, all the musicians that we lost. And most recently, George Michael. Real fan of his. This is a song that really never got a lot of airplay. Cowboys and Angels. And, you know, my heart goes out to somebody like him because, you know, whether he had drug addiction just because of most reasons why people have drug addiction, because obviously it's a really hard habit to kick, to give up, things of that caliber, or is it because he just, you know, was kind of a lost soul? I mean, he was in a relationship, you know, seemed like to have a life that we always aspire to, right? But fame and fortune is not always everything it's cracked up to be, as we well know, but it's a real shame that we lost so many great people. Prince this year, Glenn Frey. I mean, it just goes on and on. And so my producer just brought me this name before, and it's ironic because I just used one of these this morning, the inventor of the Solo Cup, right? Go figure. Robert Leo Holzman, 84. Gone. So if we can hit the fast forward button on this year, I think we need to, man. It's just kind of crazy stuff. But it's kind of interesting, though, when you think about the legacies that are left behind. You think about Carrie Fisher. Yes, she was great in Star Wars. But the biggest thing that she's known for, her craft-wise, is a writer. And I want to mention this because, obviously, I talk about a lot of vital personal aspects to my life and everybody who I touch out there in terms of speaking. But in terms of drug addiction, mental illness, bipolar, I mean, she really put her signature on coming out and speaking candidly about bipolar disorder and her massive depression and her drug addiction. And a lot of these things are obviously coupled and exacerbate one another. And she was well ahead of the curve, I should say, and being a spokesperson, because that's what it takes in any endeavor, any cause that needs attention, especially something, you know, for a woman who died at a young age, 60. But I mean, speaking at it so very early and not knowing what kind of backlash she would have received. Could she have ever gotten a movie deal again, a book deal? I mean, obviously she penned this and it was probably something that was attractive to publishers thinking, wow, well, hey, I mean, she's got a great following, so why wouldn't people buy her book? But then again, it's taking a big risk talking about something that, you know, was so stigmatized and still is to a certain degree. Certainly we discuss it here about how it's becoming a little bit more acceptable, thankfully, by having more discussions and having experts on and things of this caliber, which is very, very vital. But I really take my hat off to her because of the role she played and not worrying about the repercussions. Obviously, she was a bit of a rebel. If you know anything about Carrie Fisher, she obviously didn't take any chances, didn't pull any punches, called a spade. And, you know, you have to respect somebody of that nature because it's really, really important and significant for us kind of all to live lives like that, right? Absolutely. So on January 20th, what are you going to be doing? You're going to be watching TV? Maybe the Trump inauguration? Well, what is going to be or who is going to be the musical guest? Well, that's the problem. Did you hear about this? This is great. So Mr. Trump can't find any A musicians, bands, celebrities to provide music for his inauguration. What a shame, huh? Can you believe that? I mean, most musicians, I would say, it's safe to say that they're on a safe side, Democrats, right? So I believe he's got the Rockettes. They don't sing. I don't believe they sing. No, I don't think they sing at all. They lip sync probably. And I believe he's got a winner from one of those reality shows, not American Idol or the other show. But anyway, I don't even know the person's name. But that's where he is. That's his first probably task of office, is trying to get somebody who will perform for him. Crazy, right? So in other New York City news, 96 years in the making, baby. Woo! We got a subway opening, Second Avenue Subway. Now, you have to kind of be familiar with New York City to really appreciate this, because if you live on the far east side of New York, on the Upper East Side especially, and you need to take a subway, it's a hike to the Lexington line, which is the closest line. And it's been in the works. It started in the 20s, and then it's stalled big time. And under multiple administrations, it just didn't have much luck. And then the final groundbreaking happened about a decade ago. And we're safe to say phase one is done. Yes, fantastic. So they got all the dignitaries and everybody who wants to be pictured, and socialites are going to be cruising on the Second Avenue subway on Saturday, New Year's Eve. And then for all the $3 paying, low-life, hardworking citizens of New York City, the Big Apple, the Grand Manzana, your first ride can happen, I believe, at noon on New Year's Day. Pretty cool. So I believe the artwork down there is pretty interesting. And I think the trains are probably going to be a little bit oversized, because the train systems, the tunnels, everything is all new, bored out, tunneled, et cetera, and also going to be connecting to the another train line, which is phase two. And it's going to be a great service to New York. More importantly, to the people who have to tough it out, man. I used to live on York Avenue, and on a cold 15, 10 degree day at 6-7 o'clock in the morning, when you got a hoof all the way to Lexington Avenue, man, woo, bitter, bitter cold. So congratulations to all the people who got that done. All I have to say is it's about time. So I am very, very happy to bring my first guest on to the show this morning. And here's a little sample of what this gentleman, world-renowned pianist, sounds like. And that's a little bit of Mike LaDon. Mike LaDon is my guest, jazz pianist, founder and president and CEO of Disability Pride New York, so New York City. Mike, welcome to the show. Great pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Mark. My pleasure to be here.
Unbelievable feat that you've dealt with in life personally, and how you've dealt with adverse situations, and how you've built this organization, which is the overall umbrella, Disability Pride New York City. You have your maiden voyage of Disability Pride parade, which happened 2 years ago, first one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2015.
2015, and it's a great success. And you're here to talk about a lot of different things, about Disability Pride New York City, but more importantly, Jazz Legends for Disability Pride, the Pride Parade fundraiser, which is happening on Thursday, January 5th, right here in New York City. We're going to go through some of the artists, but it's an amazing lineup of jazz icons that you've known. Obviously, you're probably good friends with most of these cats who are donating their time because they believe in what you believe in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, they're friends of mine, but they're also heroes of mine from when I was a kid. And I have gotten to play with them all, and that's how I got to know them. And when I had my daughter, who's going to be 13 on Valentine's Day, you know, they were all there with me going through those first moments when you become the parent of a disabled child and you have no idea what you're looking at, and you're getting all the wrong information, and things seem so dire, and they put you into this hellhole that is totally unnecessary. And these gentlemen were all there, went through the entire thing with me, have known Mary, my daughter, since she was born. And Ron Carter, who's one of the artists, used to come to my house. We would rehearse. Mary's heard Ron Carter in my living room several times, just him and I playing, which is something not many children get. As a result,
not many adults get.
Not anybody gets. And, you know, as a result, Mary has this affinity for music. Well, she always did. She's nonverbal. She's legally blind. So she doesn't watch TV much. And she's also intellectually disabled. And so, you know, she's really in another world, another plane from the typical child. But the plane that she's in is perfect for me, because what she loves is sound. And so music, she's been hearing it since she was in the womb, obviously. But in her life, I mean, I took her to meet Oscar Peterson when she was right just home from the hospital because he was playing. We were friends, and he saw her when she was born premature, so she was tiny, like a. People actually came up to us in Birdland where he was playing and said, "Is that a doll?" Because she was asleep.
Wow.
But she looked like a perfect little doll. Hmm. And anyway, she's known everyone. They've all known her. And, of course, they know me. So when I got this crazy idea, which was inspired by Mary's schoolmates and her at her school, just watching them just getting, again, was taking my first maiden voyage into the world of the disabled child, which is, they have this school where they all are together in smaller classrooms. And
is this the Jewish Guild school?
Right, the Guild school, part of the Lighthouse. Mm-hmm. And they, put them in different classes according to levels. And so there's varying degrees of levels of functionality. And some of these kids, they're all blind. Most of them are cognitively disabled or delayed in some way. But they came out and saying at their graduation one year, they came out and saying, put on a happy face. And there's these things with music that seem like they come from another place, too. When they coordinate like this, the coincidence is incredible that, I was, again, sitting there looking around the room and, I love my daughter to death, obviously. And I'm looking at all these other parents with their disabled children. The love in there was incredible, but also what
palpable, I'm sure.
Yeah, and what the children did. I mean, looking around, if you were an outsider when you walked in there, you might get freaked out. You might be like, "Oh my God,
it's a different world.
It's a whole different world. What is this? This isn't the bubblegum and flowery world that I
spoiled
thought the
children that you see everywhere.
Right. This is not the Brady Bunch.
No.
This is something different." And I was sitting there thinking that myself, to be honest. I was like, wow, this is so different than I thought it was going to be when I brought my child to school and watched her graduations happen. And I'm feeling kind of down and sort of a little self-pity is coming into play, And then these kids get up and they say, sing Put on a Happy Face, which is, gray skies are going to clear up. Put on a happy face. Get rid of the frown and cheer up. And I felt like, this is perfect for me right now because they're right. This is not, that's the reality.
And that's their world.
And that's
their
world.
You're in their world, but they're feeling good.
They're feeling good. And so that's what I realized. When you're with the children and not thinking about all the other things that society is planting in your head, it's a good world. It's as good a world as any that there is. In fact, in some ways, it may be even a little bit nicer because my daughter doesn't have the manipulative ways and the different things that children get into at her age. She is really a pleasure to be around, although she gets on my nerves, of course. She's a child, she's throwing everything. But
so that was the impetus.
So this is the impetus, is that I said to my wife, why isn't there a Disability Pride Day? Because there was just a Gay Pride Day. And it was just a crazy thought. And then I went home and I started thinking, I wonder how you would do it. My wife was like, maybe you can call the mayor's office. So I called 311, which is, I didn't know how to call the mayor's office. And, of course, I couldn't get through to the mayor. And I'm like, how do they do parades? So that was it. And then I started, that's how I am. That's how I am as a person. I start, once I latch onto an idea, that's why I'm a jazz musician. I mean, that's also not a typical life or a typical career choice. But once I latched on to the music, I wouldn't give up. I wanted to get as good as I could be at that music. And once I latched onto this idea, I wouldn't give up. I wanted to get it up and running and see it happen. So, Mike, sorry for interrupting,
but you must have been dumbfounded to find out that there are disability pride parades pretty much throughout the country, but not in New York City when you were thinking about launching
this. I mean, I thought it was my idea, first of all. I'm like, wow, I'm a genius. I had this idea. Then I put it on Facebook. I put up a Facebook page, and people started getting in touch with me and saying, well, it's not your idea, sorry, but, they've already had one in Chicago, and there's one in Boston, and there's one in New Jersey.
But not in
New York City, not in L.A. So then it was like, okay, well, let's put one up in New York City. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we have to have one here. And somebody's, I made friends, and I started attracting people to me on Facebook, and they started helping. And long story short, I created a nonprofit finally, And we it's funny because it took forever to get this nonprofit going, and I had to raise money to do that. And in the meantime, I'm thinking, you know, the years are going by, and I'm still doing this. I'm sitting in my living room, like trying to get people to look, you know, to look at my Facebook page, to like it. I'm going to try and meet politicians, and I'm
doing your legwork,
doing my legwork,
how do you get permits,
all of these, you know, just getting educated and meeting activists from the community who were like
passionate
and sort of leery about me because I come out of nowhere. I'm not disabled, but my daughter is. But they don't like parents of the disabled, evidently. I didn't know any of this history. There's a lot of history with parents being, you know, the people that keep the disabled from becoming independent. Of course, I'm not one of those parents. So there's a lot of stereotyping from the abled community to the disabled. There's
huge,
also
huge.
There's also some stereotyping going on from the disability community onto parents of the, which I'm trying to break all these barriers.
Walls down, absolutely.
Right. So I get it up and running, and I finally get a group of people who can get me to the mayor's office, and it all culminates in the year 2015.
Now, this is the mayor's office for persons with disabilities.
Right, right. And once they latched on, we had the support that we needed, and I got the idea, where am I going to raise money? So only people I know are jazz musicians, and I got the idea to do the concert. So I started asking, what would you think? I really felt very inhibited about it because, again, these are my heroes, and I didn't want them to be like, all right, look, buddy, you know, you got your problems. I got mine. Leave me alone. But they weren't at all. So, you know, the first year we had Ron Carter, Benny Golson, Jimmy Cobb, Lewis Hayes. I mean, all these, Harold Mayburn, George Coleman. They were all
under one roof.
Under one roof. And they were all like, yes, we would love to do it. In fact, we'd be mad if you didn't ask us.
That's
Bob
great.
Cranshaw, who just passed, who's a great bass player, was one of the icons of the bass. He was in, we were together with Milt Jackson for 11 years, him and Mickey Roker and I. And he is really a beautiful person. He just passed this year, too, not long ago. And he was one of the main inspirations because once we did the first one, I thought, I can't do it again. I mean, to get these guys to do it once, that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to push
it. It's a call in favors. It's
but
tough.
Every time I'd see Bob, he'd go, are we doing it again?
That's great.
And I'd say, oh, I don't think so, Bob. And he'd say, we have to do it again. Come on. So I put the word out. Everybody's on again. So, yeah. And so, but in, what I was going to tell you is in the year 2015 is also happened to be the 25th anniversary of the passing of the ADA, which I had no idea. But because of that, that's what made the mayor's office come on board with us, because they were already thinking, we have to do a celebration.
The way it coincides is perfect.
Right. And then they heard that we were going to do a parade, and they're like, oh, great, we'll get behind the parade, and we'll have other events. And
hopefully they made things easier for you, pushing things through.
They
hopefully.
Got us all the permits, and they did. So, so fine. And we had the police marching band was in it, and, you know, and it was this big.
It's everything you dreamed of, probably, and more.
Much more than I ever dreamed. I had thought maybe we, for the first one, we'd have 300-400 people just walk down the street with some banners and then maybe have a few people entertain at the end. That was my humble thought.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing at all.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing at all. In fact, they had a parade like that here in 97. They did a couple of parades in 97. They weren't big. They were like that. They were around Central Park, and they were, you know, maybe hundreds of people. But then it all ended. And for 25 years, there was nothing. And so here I come out of the blue. No one knows me in the community. I'm not an activist. I'm not a politician. I'm a jazz musician of all things. And they're all like, well, we don't know. We have to test this guy out because, of course, this is a community that's not only discriminated against but exploited. So they're like, you could be just another charlatan trying to do something for yourself using us as your, you know, banner of like, well, what a good guy I am, you know. So I stepped back and I said, look, you know, I won't even put my name on this thing. You know, in fact, I offered them to take the nonprofit I created and said, if you don't trust me, just take it. You know, you can use it. I gladly step aside because I am not, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm a little, it's a little scary. And I don't have the time to do this either.
What was their response when you said that?
No, you can take care
of it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can do
that. That's all
that.
You need to do.
Yeah.
Offer them more work.
Exactly.
And they said, no, keep it yourself, pal.
Exactly. So here I am, you know, 3 years into it and working like a dog. We want to the thing that people don't know about parades is that they cost money.
A fortune.
So many people have said to me, well, what are you doing? Like, why do you need to raise money for a parade? Doesn't the city just put it on? No.
Police overtime. First of all, we're not right. You're gonna have to hire more cops because they're all at Trump Plaza.
Exactly, and they're exactly now, And that's a lot of money. But, I mean, there's everything. There's so many aspects to this to a parade.
Traffic flow.
Yeah,
security.
I mean, and getting, just getting everything lined up with it. I mean, when I saw
accessibility is huge.
Well, that's the other thing, you know. I mean, you talked about the Second Avenue subway line, but what I've heard is that the subway line itself is accessible, but not one stop is accessible that it stops at.
Oh, really? I
so
read that it was.
So if you get on, you can't. I heard that from the community that
okay.
It's not.
Then it's probably the subway
is the Second Avenue subway is accessible.
Yes,
but when it stops. You can't get out.
So at all the stations, really.
At all the stations. They didn't, you know, this is the thing. These are one of the things we're trying
in
to.
In 2016.
Yeah, of course, because basically the ADA started out with a bang. They did all the curb cuts. They gave you the bathrooms. They tried. But then things, if you notice, have just petered out completely. I mean, there's no one's talking about all the other issues that are still here. And those curb cuts are starting to be, there's ditches in front of them that your wheelchair will.
Sure, they wear down, yeah.
And so, like, you know, there's so many things that are not being addressed. And that's the point of the parade. It's a day to feel proud and have a good time and celebrate.
Recognize,
but it's
sure.
also a day to make people aware of these. It's also a way for you and I to talk about this. Or, you know, I mean, just from doing this concert, I've been on many radio shows. And talking about all these issues, which is the point, raising awareness and making the community visible to the abled community who tend to just ignore it, you know, and it's really the most discriminated against invisible community there is.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the word invisible because like you, when we, before we went live this morning, you said, you know, Mark, how did you get involved in this? I said, I've been disability advocate for years and I have an invisible disability. I'm visually impaired, but you know, I don't have a cane or a dog, et cetera. I can walk around and amble around New York City pretty well, but there's so many, you know, millions of people who have invisible disabilities.
Yeah,
and then when a parade of this caliber is celebrated, they get a chance to speak or to feel included and to educate people, a city, a nation, a newspaper, the press, the media cover it. And that's what it's all about. And the most important thing is the happiness that people who have disabilities, your daughter, Mary, who's 13, who gets to celebrate who she is and what she can become. On a day
and also
like this.
To be just together.
Yeah.
As a community.
Camaraderie.
Because the community itself is splintered and it's got divisions that are really big. You know, it's not like, hey, we're all disabled and we're brothers in this thing with in solidarity. They, you know, the blind people don't talk to the deaf people, don't talk to.
There's a whole hierarchy.
There's a whole hierarchy. And
oh,
then
yeah,
there's
sure.
the cognitively disabled people who are on the bottom of the barrel. And all of these divisions that you wouldn't think, you would think there would be a brotherhood in the community. There is to a point, but not what I thought. Nothing is as I thought it would have been when I joined this
especially thing. When you're fighting for recognition, for rights, for acceptance, for money.
Right. That's right. And then, you know, there are people in the community who... If I say, you know, like, for instance, there might be performers that I would like to have perform in the parade at the parade day because we have a celebration at the end of the parade. And I'll say, you know, you have a disability because we only have people from the community perform. And they'll say, what are you talking about? I don't have a disability. I say, well, you know, you're blind. That's a disability. No, it's not. I say, well, you know, it is. And they just won't. You know, they get mad at me. First, and there's that faction of the community that are like, don't call it a disability. And I think the point about using the word disability is to take the punch out of it, you know, to take the negative part out of it, that it's not bad to be disabled. It's not wrong to be disabled.
It's just different.
It's just a thing that you are. It's just, you know, it's just like you have brown hair or you're disabled.
Exactly.
It's part of what makes
your characteristic.
You and just go ahead and say it and accept it. It's almost like the gay pride thing because it is really pulling people out of the closet.
Yeah.
And it's also pulling parents out of the closet because if they can have their kids sort of pass as non-disabled, they will. Even no matter what it puts on that kid, you know, no matter if it puts a crunch on that kid to try and fit in a world where he's not fitting in or she's not fitting in. And it's all about shame and embarrassment, really. And,
and
how are they going to feel proud if the parents are not proud of this child? So this is, and they do love the child.
Sure. But they're trying to make life as easiest as possible for them because we know, hey, my son is sitting right next to you because he's off this week. He's hanging out. and you know life is tough for everybody.
Yeah.
And whatever you can do, not in an enabling sense, But as a person with a parent with a child with a disability, you know that world is going to be that much harder for them. So to your point,
it can be, you know, but the point is if we attack it from an ableist point of view where it's like, no, you have to fit in with my world. And if you can fit in with my, if you can assimilate into my world, then we'll make life maybe a little better for you. But not really. The point is that it's got to be on regular human terms, just people being people, and you treat them the same way. And I like what this year the Quakers, we're having our concert at the Quakers Friends Meeting House on January 5th.
Which is a great venue.
Which is a beautiful venue, and it goes from 6:30 to 9:30, and you can buy tickets at winterjazzfest.com/jazzlegends.
Or call 212-505-3474.
Or just go to disabilitypridenyc.org because we have a link to the tickets, too.
Or hell, just call up Mike right now.
No, don't do that. Actually, people have been coming to my house for tickets. It's funny. But
hey, Mike, we need some tickets.
But, you know, I'm not a religious guy, but I do like what the Quakers have said to me because they've joined us. And they said, you know, because what you're doing fits our mission completely because we believe that everyone is equal because everyone has a soul. You know, and if you have a soul, then you cannot be discriminated.
Amen, brother.
You should not be discriminated against, and you can't be just shoved aside. So they're joining us completely. Like they're going to partner with us on the parade and everything.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, I didn't realize that they were also one of the people who had helped the Gay Pride Parade get started because their mission is to, you know, help the people that are being ignored and discriminated against.
Love it.
So me too, you know, and I said, you know, that, I mean, I didn't do this for religious reasons, but that is a great reason to be doing this because that, I mean, that is exactly what we're trying to put forward. Even if you don't believe, if you're an atheist or whatever you believe in, I don't think anyone, this is a question I had. If you're an atheist, do you believe that you're soulless? I don't know about that. I mean, I know you might not believe in God or a spirit world, but everyone, I think, pretty much believes that they have a soul. I think most human beings do, although I don't know, so that's an open question.
I know a few people without souls, though.
Yeah. Yes, one is going to run the country, but...
Hello.
My
religion is decency. I believe in the church of decency.
Me too.
Yeah,
you know, just common sense.
Yep.
But the point is, if you believe that you have a soul, then you can say that each person has a soul, and so therefore...
And there's a lot of great souls lining up on Thursday, January 5th.
Well,
Ron
this is
Carter.
The other thing, right. Right.
Let's go through the list here. Yeah. Benny Golson, one of the first jazz greats you played for, Benny?
Not one of the first, no, but I've been with him for 20 years.
Well, okay, yeah. Longest, I should say. Yeah. Buster Williams, phenomenal. He's a bassist, right?
Yep.
Jimmy Cobb, Harold Mayburn, Eddie Henderson, Louis Hayes, Carl Allen, George Coleman, fantastic. Peter Bernstein, Eric Alexander, Joe Farnsworth, Buster Williams, Bill...
Charlap,
that's right. Rene Rosnes, Kenny Washington, Peter Washington, John Weber, Donald Vega, Vincent Herring, Russell Malone.
And also John Faddis and Larry Willis and Roberta Gamberini, who's a great singer, will be there as well. They joined us a little late, but they're going to be there too.
And this is happening again Thursday, January 5th. For tickets, call or online, winterjazzfest.com/jazzlegends. Jazz Legends, or call 212-505-3474. So now, when you put together an iconic roster like this, is it Mike LaDon picking up the phone saying, hey, Benny?
Yeah, well, it's emails, you know. But yeah, I just send out an email to all the people. Last year, even, I don't know Wynton Marsalis very well. I've met him a few times. We're not like best buds or anything.
Sure.
But I didn't even know he had an autistic brother.
I didn't either until
but
I read the quote.
But I did contact Wayne Quebec, who's our vice president, owns the management company of which Wynton's manager is part of. So we got to him, Ed Arendelle, and he got in touch with Wynton. And then next thing I know, Wynton is signed on. And then also my friend Christian McBride, who we've been friends forever, he played last year. And Monty Alexander played last year, who's also a good friend because we used to, there's all these connections through music. We both played with Milt Jackson. So it's just an incredible night where not only do we all get to hear this music, what happens is they come out and they play two or three tunes each for 3 hours. And you sit in this beautiful room, which is an old church, but it's more like an old home.
It's very warm.
Yeah, and the musicians are right on the floor. There's no stage, so they're right there. You're right there sitting next to them.
And that's the way jazz should be experienced.
Yeah, and it's very intimate, and the sound is beautiful in there. So you're listening to this thing in this very spiritual atmosphere, and you know that the money is all going to this incredible day. That's a historic occasion here in New York City, and it's going to do so much good for people. So I don't think there's a much better feeling you can get. It's not just a concert. That's what I keep telling people. It's not like, okay, well, should I go to Lincoln Center and see the ballet? Or, no, you should go do this, because this has got the added bonus that you're doing this incredible thing for this community. I mean, when you spend that $100, you hear the music, but it goes right to the parade. Not one penny. We, none of us make money. It's a completely volunteer organization.
We're referring to the Disability Pride Parade, which is happening in 2017 in July. And Mike LaDon's my guest. He's the world-renowned jazz pianist, founder, president, and CEO of Disability Pride New York City, their umbrella name. And, of course, their foremost event is the Disability Pride Parade. Now, it's interesting how you mentioned that Mary, ironically, your daughter Mary, who was born with a genetic disorder, prematurely, correct, takes to music so well. And at such a young age, you took the music at such a young age because your father was a guitarist.
Right. That's right.
And then your father and you were gigging together at age 10?
He was booking me, actually. Yeah. I had a band of my own.
I like your father.
Yeah. Oh, he was a fun guy. And he was so happy to see me playing music. And I had that support, you know. And he owned a music store. I grew up in the music store. And so
it's in
music,
your DNA,
it was in complete music from the beginning. And it's the same for Mary, because, you know, she's been hearing me practice, because I practice a lot. And she sits right at the piano on the floor when I practice. And she loves every minute of it. And now she improvises herself on the piano with these beautiful things she gets into. She doesn't play Mary Had a Little Lamb. She makes up her own things. But, I mean, she's really got the heart of and soul of an artist. I mean, she waves her head around and she passionately plays the piano.
And, Mike, I read that she has hit sounds and notes that you're still unfamiliar with.
Yeah, well, I also play organ. That cut you played was a Hammond organ. And I have a Hammond organ keyboard that has all these buttons. And she loves that thing. So she plays it. And one time she was playing it and it was bending notes and things. I'm like, how does she do that? Yeah, so she is very cunning and imaginative, and she's smart in that way, where she's investigating things.
So we all know and agree that music transcends language. So is there just a whole nother capacity in which you and Mary and possibly your wife are connecting with her?
God only knows. Yes. I would say there's no doubt about it. But I have this thing that I've played since she was a baby, this little piece. It's a sort of a pastoral little jazz thing that's almost like maybe a John Coltrane sounding piece. And it's very serene, and I played it for her since she was a baby, and, you know, just to cool her out. And then after a while, it started becoming this thing where she would come to me if I started playing it. She'd be in another room and she'd sit down. Now she comes to me and just gives me a big hug when I start playing it. So I know she relates to this song. And I put it on one of my CDs. There's a CD I made a few years back on piano, a trio CD, Live at the Cellar. It's on Cellar Live, and it's called Speak, because Mary doesn't speak. And I wrote a suite called Sweet Mary. And this is the opening piece to the suite, and it's called Listen. And I put it on there because I didn't really know if I should, because it's such a personal thing that we had.
Sure.
And it was private, you know, and it was deep, because, you know, we don't talk to each other. But
you do.
But my wife, but we do. And that's what my wife said. She said, you have to put that, you have to document that thing, because it is, she, you know, first of all, it's pretty. And also, it's so meaningful, you know, so it's on there. And I think I may open the concert this year with it.
So speaking of deep, I never thought I'd be going there, but do you think it's interesting how, you know, your father is a musician, you're a musician, and you have a daughter who's nonverbal, and this is a way for you to communicate?
And it's
how things work out.
I know. It is very true. I mean, I think music in general with the brain is so important. And I think that it's really helped Mary to progress and understand so much more now than she used to, because it's a proven fact that just listening to music makes the brain communicate with itself in a ways that nothing else does. Like, you know, language happens in a certain part of the brain, or other things happen in certain parts of the brain, but music happens all over the brain. So it's firing.
Yeah. Left and right.
Left and right. And then if you're playing music, it's even more intensely firing like that. So when Mary's playing that music and making it up and into it, and she can go on for half hour. You mean, I have to put a heavy books on the piano lid to make her stop sometimes. But she, you know, this is the best therapy that she could get because it's making her brain develop. It's helping everything connect. And music is one of the most important things in this world. And that's what schools need to know, you know, because the first thing they cut is music and the arts. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's much more important than basically the other things. I mean, that, without the music to develop the brain, the other things can't get in, you know.
Creativity doesn't mean you're just going to be an artist or a carpenter, et cetera. Creativity goes into even possibly, this may be a stretch, but being an accountant, because if you think so linear, how can you be creative?
Yeah.
Come up with better.
This is the problem. I mean, this is the problem with medicine. And when we had Mary, mm-hmm. they have no ability of creative, that they can't get out the box, the doctor. So when they told us about Mary, it was this archaic description of her syndrome that just really it's been changed so much. It has nothing to do with today's
even a vernacular child. They said she was going to be mentally retarded, yeah. and morbidly obese.
Morbidly obese with behavioral problems. And
wrong, and wrong.
Yeah, I mean, she's nothing like that. So it's like, well, she's intellectually disabled, but she's not severely retarded. They were saying, like, basically was expecting, you know, someone laying in the corner drooling, you know, wanting to eat all the time because she has Prader-Willi syndrome, where the stomach doesn't communicate to the brain that it's full. But actually, she's one of the few that actually gets full. So she stops eating on her own, which is a miracle. And but even so, people have ways of controlling. The point that they don't tell you is that, you know, they tell you the worst things and they scare the hell out of you. And that's a hell of a thing when you're already trying to absorb the fact that you've had a child that's disabled. You're just trying to wrap your brain around that. And then they're smacking you in the head with bricks with, like, and it's going to be this, and it's pound you with this information that's wrong. So, you know, the one thing that the neurologist told me that was the best advice is just watch Mary, look at Mary, see who Mary is, forget about all this stuff, you know, don't even look at it. Because if you read it, your brain, as a person, you start thinking they're all the wrong things, and you look at the child, and then it's like, I don't know, it seems pretty good. Nothing like that. In fact, when I'd go on the road, it would be this thing where my brain would start going nuts because I wasn't with her, you know? And I'd be thinking like, oh, but what's going to happen in a year? What's going to be like in 10 years, you know? And then I come home and see her. It's like, who cares? It's good right now. And that's another thing you learn is to live right now.
Absolutely.
You know? And stop
Absolutely.
Thinking about 10 years from now.
And sometimes you can't even help but not think about it because wherever you go in the public, and I've read that you've had, and this is really, you know, it's amazing, and this is a little bit of a sidebar here. I thought we were a society that was much more advanced, but obviously in the last 2 months we realized that we've not much as advanced as we thought we were, and maybe just because we're on the coast here. But anyway, people are saying just really rude and insensitive things like, my condolences for you for having a child with a disability.
Yeah, I know. I'm so sorry. It's like, don't. Do that.
Come on.
Would you never, who would say that to anyone else? I'm so sorry you had a child that doesn't have brown hair or something. You know, it's like, that's idiotic.
I'm sorry you had a lobotomy, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
How could you say something like that?
I mean,
that?
You know,
Jesus
plus
Christ.
They're always, and I know these religious people mean well, but they're always saying, you know, when I pass them on the street, God bless you. It's like, I'll take God bless me, but not for Mary.
Yeah, no kidding.
I could use it.
Yeah.
But like, you know, don't pity. The whole thing with the community is do not pity us, please stop the pity, because there's nothing to be pitied here. We're strong and we can do it, and we don't need pity. We just need to have a chance to be independent. We need accessibility. We need basic civil rights that everybody else has. And that's, stop with the pity and like looking at us like, oh, those poor, broken, you know, defective people, and start looking at us like, sorry that you can't get in the bathroom here. You know, let's make it so you can. Because when we go take my daughter, we have a health club in our building. And, you know, there's a lot of stairs to get down to the pool where we go in the summer, which is hard enough for her to do. And then to go to the bathroom, it's like this major production getting her back up and down these stairs. But there's a tennis club right outside that's on the ground floor. So I take her in there and it's like, can she use the bathroom? Are you a member of the club, sir? And I'm like, no, but my daughter's, you know, she can't walk well and she's in a wheelchair. Well, I'm sorry, sir. Nobody can use the bathroom if you're not. I'm like, excuse me. Did you just hear what I said? Just common sense.
It's called humanity.
Yeah, it's common sense. And it's like, I'm going to use the bathroom. That's what I do. I just say, you can get your people and kick me out. I'll be in the bathroom. See ya. You know, and you got to go through this thing just to go to the bathroom becomes a major fight. And you're fighting. I'm tired of fighting. And I know the community is tired of fighting. I mean, the wages, the employment problems, all of that is like, it shouldn't be such an uphill battle at this stage of the game, not with the ADA in place. And I'm really worried about this new, I call it a regime.
Aptly put.
Because, you know, they have these idiots. This Jeff Sessions guy, he's a moron and an evil, vile human being. And and he thinks disabled children are the problem with the school system in this country, and that they've already gotten too much, and that they've done too much for these children, and they need to pull it back, when in fact that is the opposite of the truth. And just seeing Trump up there making fun of a disabled reporter.
New York Times reporter, of course.
You know,
and unfathomable.
You know, people don't know the word ableist.
No.
And so I'm trying to tell people about that word, because it's the same as racist. It's a way of putting one group above another group so the bigger group can have control of the littler group. And this is what they're doing when they dehumanize people like that.
What gives another individual the right to do that on any level?
Right. I mean, and especially a man running for the president of the United States of America, and the fact that
Commander in Chief.
I mean, we have to really take a look at the heart and soul of this country, because we just showed an ugly thing just came out. And I think that's more than Trump, because let's face it, Trump didn't hide it.
No.
He put it right out there.
We accepted it.
People went for it.
Yeah.
That's what's so scary. I think that's why people are so depressed about all this, because it's like, have we lost control? We have. And so this is.
I get it. We need to change. You know, we didn't want to go backwards. And believe me, Hillary is no shining star.
No, she had her problems.
She had her problems. But the reality is, you know, you don't want to put someone in place just because you want to make a difference. 4 years can really do a lot of damage to this country for someone who doesn't never even held office, and all
the people that he's assembling, and the fact that he has a Republican House and a Republican Congress is like. He's got the go-ahead. He's got the green light to dismantle so many things. And it's, you know, I don't think he's going to do it. I mean, this is the only thing getting me through, is that I don't believe in the long run he's going to do that much damage. But it's possibility.
Right. Sure,
the possibility is there. But I'm keeping my faith in humanity that he's not going to start just ripping things apart and making things worst-case scenario. I'm thinking the worst-case scenario is not going to happen. You know, but
the thing
I don't
that bothers
know.
Me the most is that you go into office to govern for the people.
Yeah.
You know, for the good of the people, for the benefit of society, not because of your ego wants to put you in that house.
Well, you know, this is where we have to figure out what was right, because people who hated Hillary so much, now we know that the Russians manipulated the information, and that there's a lot of false news on Facebook, and your people are reading these false news reports and putting them up like, see, she did this, and see, this is true. And actually, do we know if any of it's true? Who the hell knows? I mean, right now we don't know what is true, but we're buying it about Hillary. But funny about Trump, he's putting it right in your face, and we're overlooking everything. You know, we're overlooking everything. He's obviously racist. He's obviously ableist. He's sexist. He's every kind of ist that there is. And he's putting it right out there, and we're all like, well, he's kind of better than Hillary, isn't he? It's like, no, man.
You heard me mention before about the axe he's trying to get, and he can't get anything. Alec Baldwin said he'd perform it. I forget the name of the song. Right. He said he would sing, but it was perfectly apropos. But the reality is, you know what? We are where we are right now. We can't change time and go back. So this isn't the best time in everyone's lives to step up.
Yeah.
To get involved, to be the voice.
That's right.
And step
That's
away from
true.
Social media. Use it as a proper tool, but don't be the person that consumes all this. Put it out there.
That's right.
Start organizations from a local organic way up, you know, ground.
Like I did.
Exactly.
And the thing is to support something good. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's what you can do to battle all of this craziness.
If you have a skill, if you have a drive, if you have a heart and
soul. Come to the
soul.
Concert.
Yeah, man.
Come to this concert. And spend $100 on a ticket and do something good with your money and feel good about your life, because all this other stuff will peel away. You won't believe how healing hearing this music is. How, you know, that night when you walk out of that place, you're going to be like, can we come next year too and every year? And please don't stop doing this, because it's so incredible. And also, If you really want that, come to the parade. Because I'll tell you one thing that's a drag is that there's not enough spectators at the parade.
No, no.
We had over 5,000 people at the parade last year. They were all in the parade.
Isn't that great?
But the spectators were light the first year, and they were light the second year.
Yeah.
This year, we're going to have the parade. It's going to start in Union Square Park. We're going to have it on July 9th. It's a Sunday. Starts in Union Square Park. It goes down Fifth Avenue, which we've never had a Fifth Avenue parade before. And it's going to wind up in Washington Square Park, where we're going to have the celebration for 3 hours. And I really would like to get the word out that if you want to enjoy a day where you erase all of this Trump and political nonsense that we're in, come there.
Celebrate and, life.
Yeah, and support life and see something fantastic and kind of incredibly magical. I mean, my friends have come who don't really have a connection with the disability world, but they do with me. And they've just come to see,
absolutely,
what is this? What mm-hmm. is Mike Ledon doing? And they came last year and they were like, how did you do this? It's unbelievable.
Well, Mike, true confession here. The fact that is, when I learned about this organization, so I've been doing the New Jersey Disability Pride Parade for many, many years in Trenton, New Jersey.
Yeah, I went to it.
Been a keynote there a couple of years, and I spoke last year. Anyway, the very end, because I had a gig, et cetera, and same thing. A lot of participants, but lack of spectators, because it's the middle of the week and it's Trenton, New Jersey, so there's not a lot of spectators.
Right.
But when I heard about this, I'm like, this is amazing. This is exactly what I live for. Music and advocacy.
Right.
Meld together. This is my dream come true. And the fact that it's for people who live in New York City or in a tri-state area, I was with CD 101.9. Don't kill me for saying it, smooth jazz station, but I used to produce a traditional jazz program. So I love all these cats that you're talking about.
Right.
And I swore that I met you sometime somewhere,
maybe
backstage somewhere.
Maybe.
And I was just like, I got to get in touch with Mike Ledon, because this is something I got to be a part of and publicize.
Well, thank you very much for that support, because this is the way to get the word out, obviously. And hopefully it'll fall into the right ears, and somebody will either go online, go to winterjazzfest.com/jazzlegends, or you can just go to our website, disabilitypridenyc.org, and you can either buy a ticket or just donate. There's a donate button there. And all the money goes directly. We are not, a tricky little foundation where we're siphoning money off the top. We're a grassroots. There's only about 8 of us in this organization doing all the work, and we're doing it all for free. And all the money goes towards the parade. So,
what's the ballpark figure to put something like that on?
It's about between $90,000 and $100,000.
I said $100,000, yeah.
So we have to raise a whole lot of money every year, and then we spend it all, and then we have to start from square one all over again, which is where we are now. And, I've been doing this. It's exhausting. It's a full-time job. So I'm willing to do it, though. Because that day when you're in the parade, it's an incredible feeling.
And I mean, picture I saw with Mary next to you on stage.
Right.
She's glowing.
Oh, yeah. And, just seeing the 5,000 people out there that are just glowing, too.
Sure. Exactly.
It's like all of that glowing is like addictive.
Call the New York City Fire Department. how many, is it obvious that there are members of the disabled community there? At the event?
Concert? At the concert, not as many as you would think, but some. Yeah, there's wheelchair users and there's other people there. But this concert is mainly a jazz event.
It's a crowd.
That raises the money for the community, because the community is not loaded with money.
Mm, sure.
So,
they're strapped. And you have some great sponsors. New York Life?
New York Life, Nissan, Steinway Pianos, Winter Jazz Fest. The Quakers and MV1, which is another car company, was a major sponsor. And so, but New York One really did, and Nissan really stepped up.
Is WBGO, Jazz Station out of New York, a sponsor?
They're not a sponsor.
They help
you
out?
But they're doing our ads. They do what they can.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Awesome. So in 2017, a renowned jazz great pianist, a father of a great, great daughter, a husband. What's down the road for you? Obviously, you want to make this bigger, better. You want to attract more people, raise more money.
Yeah, I'm trying to develop my organization, and I'm taking sort of lessons on how to do that. I'm taking going online and checking out tutorials and trying to figure out what it means to be the president of a 501c3. and make more connections. Yeah, grow this thing. What's down the line for me? I want to get step aside from this thing because I really don't have the time for this, really. I mean, what this is for me is an incredible overstress of time for me because I'm already taking care of a disabled child and I'm a jazz musician, which means I'm traveling and I'm writing and I have to do that, all that stuff. So, you know, eventually I'm hoping that we make enough money where we can get a director and to come in, a professional director come in and just become an advisor or something.
Sure.
And just keep this thing. I want it to keep running. I hope, you know, I'm hoping that it keeps running. But our main thing right now is to just keep biting the bullet till that happens and make sure that this parade happens every year.
And Mike, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this final question before you head out the door to George Coleman's Autumn in New York. What is it the most that you love about music, being a jazz musician?
I love the feeling of it. I don't care what kind of music it is. If it goes in my body and makes me feel that certain thing, that's what it is. It's more than notes. It's more than rhythms. It's that indefinable thing that goes in your body. I said, I've always, since a little boy, you know, the first guy I got into myself was James Brown. And it was because the feeling of his music went right in me and made me dance, you know, and I couldn't sit still when I heard James Brown. And I'm sure that's what most people, it's that really a what do they call that? Visceral?
Visceral, absolutely.
That's that feeling. Yeah, that's what I like.
And the fact that you still impart your knowledge to students in Newark, New Jersey?
No, I'm out. I've stopped all of the big time. I have private students. Yeah, I have private students. I had to cut out all of the teaching things because, I mean, I do clinics and things like that.
And your website is mikeledonne.net?
Correct.
It's L-E-D-O-N-N-E. Mike, all the best to you, man.
Thank you.
Real pleasure. I mean, to meet you in a caliber of musician, and more importantly, the man that you are, the father that you are, and an advocate for the disabled community. I thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Pleasure. So I wish everyone the best in 2017. Special thanks to Zach on the controls, Jesse, the program director here at Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great 2017. Special thanks always to Gary Null and to all of my fellow guest hosts here at Progressive Radio Network. We have an incredible platform to share our thoughts, opinions, and to have you on the show. And we never, never take this lightly. And we have some great topics and guests planned for January 2017. Have a great and safe Happy New Year. My name is Mark Farrell. Check me out at markfarrellmotivation.com. If you want me to speak at your school, college, corporation, or more, markfarrellmotivation.com. Happy New Year. We'll be right back.